Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Real Estate Investor MBA for another great interview that we have lined up for you today. My name is Jeremy Moyer, and I'm one of your hosts. I am flying solo today as my co-host Tejas Gosai is not able to be here. Please check us out on our website, realestateinvestormba.com, where we have all interviews in both video and audio formats. We're also available on several of the podcast platforms such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Please subscribe and download all of our past episodes to listen to them. If you think that we're providing value, please leave us a five-star review. Give us some feedback. We love receiving feedback from our listeners. Also, if you have any suggestions on guests for the future, please let us know and we'll do our best to bring them on. So I'm excited to announce our guest for you today, Fuquan Bilal. Thank you so much for your time this morning and joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to jumping on this podcast. Let's get right into it.
Awesome. That sounds great. So before we get into the questions, can you tell us, our listeners, who the real Fuquan is and why real estate?
Also, the real Fuquan, I'm still trying to figure out. One day I'll be able to let you know when I figure it out. No, I'm actually a superhero to my dad, to my kids, actually. I always say that first. Family is first with everything that I do. And that is the main driver that keeps me focused and keep me charged every day for what I do within the real estate realm. So I've been investing in real estate for about 21 years now. Jumped out the window and grew wings flying down, as they say, in about 99. Had the opportunity to ride the wave into the market, collapse, and had to start all over again. And I was really grateful for that moment because it really grounded me and showed me that I didn't have all the answers and I needed to build a network of people that I can continue to get information from to grow and help other people as well. So, that kind of morphed into me starting off doing fix and flips, to me doing short sales, to me being involved in the note space. And now and today, I run a fund and we invest in different alternative assets all within a real estate realm. We buy tax liens to get real estate at a discount. We do some fix and flips and rentals, and we still do notes. So that's pretty much my background. I'm the CEO and fund manager of NNG Capital Fund.
Very good. Thank you for that. So you mentioned hitting some adversity. I like to kind of just touch on that a little bit. So you said you started early, run out of the gate, and then you ran into some hiccups, the market correction. Can you just talk through the resolve that you had to have? How'd you do it? A lot of investors might have gave up and be like, this is just real estate thing's not for me, and go back, working a 9-to-5.
Yeah, adversity brings growth. I mean, for those people who went through the 9-to-5, they really was never passionate about it. I mean, your heart was never into it. It was just something I think that people got into, made money, and during those times, a monkey in a suit could have made money. Now you have to be more tactful and skillful and have different strategies to be able to stay one step above the market. It's not for everybody. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of mental stress sometimes when you're trying to figure things out. But for those of us who are passionate about it, you know, we just keep going. Everyone wants to press the easy button, right? No one wants to take on the challenge. And I love a challenge. I've grown up in adversity all my life. I mean, I fight better with blood in my mouth anyway. You know, there was a lot of teachable moments, a lot of things that grounded me and created more self-discovery and, you know, my reason why and purpose behind everything that I'm doing. Why am I investing in real estate more than just the material and money? So when you connect to your purpose and your passion, you become unstoppable.
I love that. The passion and the purpose can fuel your perseverance sometimes, right?
Absolutely. All the time.
Yeah. Very good. I appreciate you sharing that. So the markets that you operate in, Fuquan, are they just local to you? Do you buy tax liens and notes in different states? What does that look like?
So the tax liens are local to me. Mm-hmm. Again, I've been doing real estate for 21 years, just in my backyard in New Jersey, the fix and flips and rentals that I own. And the tax lien is just a different strategy for me to get real estate at a discount, right? So or make a great return on my money if the taxes get redeemed. With the notes, that's nationwide. I got into the note business around 2011, learned about it 2012, deployed my own capital 2013, opened up a fund. And I started to buy pools, which are, you know, pretty much, they call them tapes, which is an Excel spreadsheet of a bunch of assets that you can do due diligence on and buy directly from a bank, servicer, aggregator, or a broker. And yeah, those are nationwide. You get better discounts when you buy them in volume. So we have legal teams in the states that we do operate in and licensed services and collection agencies in the states that we operate in.
Okay. And are those residential?
Yes.
That's commercial?
All residential. The commercial space, for me, I've been doing residential for so long. The commercial space is probably something I'm looking to get into the future. There's a lot of great opportunities, hotels that's going out of business, converting those into multifamilies. There's a lot of rental office space. As you know, everybody's working from home, so that sector's been hit hard. There's a lot of distress opportunity there. So that may be something we'll look at in the future. Right now, we're focusing on what we know and what we built mastery in, and that's the residential real estate space.
Okay. And then do you use your fund for all the different asset classes, I guess more the tax liens, the notes, and then if you buy fix and flips, if you actually buy the property outside of tax lien, do you use the fund to purchase those? Or
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first couple of funds I ran, they were just set up to buy notes. And mm-hmm. I did real estate on the side, my own personal portfolio. The challenge that I had with that was when I would reach out to private investors, maybe they had an IRA account, they had $50,000, $100,000. My average purchase price on properties with renovation can go anywhere up to $200,000, $250,000. So that wasn't enough. And you have some people who renege on last minute. They'll say, hey, I'm going to loan you the money, and then it gets time to closing, and you know they don't answer their phone. So I figured if I create a vehicle where I can raise capital to deploy it in whatever sector where the opportunity is and I can get the biggest discount and make the highest yield, then I can use the fund to take those assets down. So that was something that, you know, we focused on in the last few years. And now, we are able to buy four or five properties at one time. We're able to buy a pool of notes. We're able to buy a pool of tax liens. Whoever we see we can deploy the capital that, you know, have the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak.
Very good. Are you actively raising within the fund?
Absolutely.
I guess the underlying question I wanted to get to and cover was what raising capital in their current economic climate we're in and over the past year, right? Were there challenges with that? Did those conversations, did you have to approach them differently? The mindset of the investor that you're speaking to, what were there differences from before the pandemic?
Well, I think the Q1 and half of Q2 of 2020 was pretty tough because it was the unknown. Mm-hmm. No one understood what was going on. People were trying to protect their own selves, their own business, mm-hmm. And their operations, their family, and everything else. So I really wasn't trying to raise capital during that time. You know, everybody was trying to fix, you know, get the house in order, so to speak. Yeah. So our fund is a hybrid diversified model. It's not just one asset class. So that's the plus that we have versus other sponsors, because maybe they're just in the multifamily sector, or maybe they're raising money for retail office space, or maybe they're private money lenders, and then they just have that one asset class. So, you know, we're the Kiwi. So we actually invest in different types of assets. So investors like that, knowing that there's diversity within. So that, I believe that was a big plus for us to be able to raise a significant amount of capital coming out of Q2 of 2020.
Sure. Spread your risk right against different asset classes. That makes quite a bit of sense. So let's go into a specific deal, maybe recently that you've done that something didn't go quite as planned. What happened? How did you end up rectifying it? Just kind of hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I had a large deal where I was selling it was a piece of land and a property on the land. And it was a tax lien that I purchased. I renovated it. And at first was going to sell it just the building and kind of parcel off the land behind it and develop a 15-unit building. And then I decided, you know, because of what's happening in the townships, everything is really slow with COVID. They're operating at very slow compared to what they were already slow. And then now COVID come that they just fell behind months, at least 6 months behind. I didn't want to renovate it. So I put it out for sale, put it under contract. It just dragged and dragged and dragged. And the buyer finally got the approval. Now we're talking a million one, I believe it was. And last minute, they tried to pivot and didn't want to share the real results of the appraisal. It was a whole bunch of stuff that was involved that I really wasn't comfortable with. So I was going to kill the deal, and we filed the timing of essence, and we, you know, threatened to keep the deposit. We had to go through all of that stuff. But eventually it wound up closing. Mm-hmm. But they try to use different tactics to get a discount because they dragged it out long enough, and they thought I was going to be desperate and I was, you know, thirsty for the money. And I just was like, no, we'll just sue and pretty much go from there. Mm-hmm. And there's been other situations on the other end where I put a property under contract and the offers are still coming in 30-40% more than what the contract is for, and the seller's trying to back out. Mm-hmm. And it did not file a notice to sell, cloud the title, and, you know, start the legal on them. So they forced to sell to me because there's no way, if I'm ready and prepared and I have the money and they sign the contract, they have to sell. So you're seeing a lot of that in this market space that we're in now. Mm-hmm. Where people are trying to back out of the deal to get the higher offer that is coming after they get the property in the contract. So those are some of the challenges we're going through now. We're just overcoming them by using legal, you know, having the legal team go after them and cloud the title, and they can't really do anything. So, you know, people just, they don't understand that you have to have a lot of patience in real estate. And that's the weakest thing. I see a lot of people on both ends, whether they're buying or selling, don't have the patience mm-hmm. to go through. They get very emotional and make the wrong decisions. So those are some of the challenges that, you know, we have in this current marketplace. People are being greedy and they're not wanting to honor. Is this no integrity? Right. They don't want to honor the original contract because they got $40,000 or $30,000 more on the table from someone else. So they're trying to figure out ways to kill the deal. But yeah, I mean, that's it. We're still able to successfully close. It's taking a little bit longer. Mm-hmm.
You touched the base on something right there that I want to circle back to. You know, if the listener isn't maybe not as versed in the legal procedures or what they could do, if they find themselves in a situation similar to that, do they just rope in their real estate attorney and the attorney takes care of everything? Do they have to, it's good to have some level of working knowledge of, you know, how everything works. So can you just explain to that, what you did, what you used, how it worked?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I had one deal where it was a multifamily. And there was a gentleman that I buy tax liens from all the time, because I buy tax liens from other funds as well who are out of state, and they don't have the team to do the rehab. So they'll buy them, season them, and then, you know, sell them over to me once they get the final judgment. And we put a property under contract for, it was around 75,000. And the property needed a major rehab, 80,000 rehab. Once it was done, it was worth low threes. They didn't understand it. They didn't know what they had. It was very profitable for them to sell it with the point they sold it to before. They had other offers coming in when they put it under contract with me. So they tried to back out because they realized that they sold it too cheap, like way too cheap. I mean, this property could have probably went for another $50,000. Mm-hmm. So they tried to back out of the deal. They went ghost. They wasn't answering the calls, the attorney emails, everything else. So we just kind of got a litigator, which is different from a real estate attorney. Mm-hmm. Got a attorney that does litigation. And, you know, we waited to the closing date. We wired the money to the title company to show that we funded the deal. We were there ready for closing. We did everything on our end. We got the insurance. We did everything. And then we had also filed the time of the essence leading up to that. They didn't show up. And then the title company had to wire us the money back, you know, 3 days later. And that was proof that we performed. So then we started the litigation process and clouded the title. So now they have litigation clouded on the title. They can't sell to the new person because the title is clouded. And it just went on and on and on with letters from the legal company. And that lasted about 4 or 5 months until they finally caved in. And we wound up doing a deal. I paid $10,000 more. In the end, we found out what it was. They just wanted more money. Mm-hmm. And said, hey, look, let's just do the deal. You know, I'll do $10,000 more, but it cost me another $5,000 from the litigation attorney in order to kind of get this thing back to the table. So it cost me another $15,000 in time that I lost, 4 months.
Sure.
But I mean, I still own that property now and it's worth $350,000. So, you know, the COVID market, the phantom income, I mean, the phantom appreciation that we're seeing. But that's one situation, but you have to have a litigator. Not all real estate attorneys are litigators. You have to find someone who specializes in that. They usually charge an hourly fee, where a real estate attorney in my market would just charge you a flat fee of $2,000 or $2,500, whatever it is, $1,500, depending on the size of the deal, to represent you for the closing. So learning how to do that, and making sure that your title company's filed a notice to sell to cloud the title in the very beginning is very important. So just learning those tactics. I've been burnt a few times in the 21 years, so I understand how it works. I've had situations early on when I got started where I wasn't able to perform and meet the closing deadlines and got the pressure put on me with time of the essence and or I would lose my deposit. So I learned earlier on, you know, a contract is valid. You know, and if someone knows how to enforce it, then, you know, it's just up to them to enforce it to get what they need.
Okay. And that cloud of title with the notice of sale, does that happen? Can you do that before closing?
Yeah, the title company is responsible for doing that. So as soon as you have a contract, you pass attorney review, you order title, your attorney or the title company usually file what's called a notice to sell. That's in the state of New Jersey. That's what happens here. And that clouds the title until you know, the transaction goes. So usually what happens is if the deal falls apart, someone else can put it on the contract and file another notice to sell. Just during the closing, the title company is obligated to see what happened in that prior transaction. Is it still pending? It's like a foreclosure. It's like a list pendants. If it's a current foreclosure action, and in New Jersey, we file what's called a list pendants, if that's called in a title, it's the title company's responsibility to follow up with that attorney who filed it to figure out what is the current status. Is it still in foreclosure? And then they get the payoff from that. And then that is what determines, you know, what the payoff is going to be at the closing, if it's in foreclosure or some type of pending litigation.
Right. No, that makes sense. I appreciate explaining that. So you also mentioned a few things in the beginning when you were explaining that that specific deal was a tax lien. You bought it from a fund after they seasoned it. So for those that aren't familiar with tax liens are, maybe like a 1 minute summary of a tax lien and then kind of what you meant by seasoning it.
Yeah, for sure. So tax liens, I mean, this is something I learned years ago. I would say maybe 10 or 12 years ago, but I didn't start to apply the strategy until maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know how you go to a lot of seminars, you learn different things, you speak to different people. And I was rehabbing a 9-unit property and next to me was this 3-unit eyesore. It was just, and it was attached to a lot. it actually had a double lot. And my 9 unit didn't have any parking. So I went to the township to find out who owned the property. And once I found out who owned the property, I started to do marketing to them. I skip traced the number. I started to call them and left probably about 15 messages before they called me back. It was like, we're calling you back because we know you're not going to stop. What do you want? And they said, if you own the property next door, I'm interested in buying it. And they said, well, this is a tax lien that we didn't foreclose on yet. We have about 6 more months before we actually get the final judgment. So what people who invest in tax liens usually do is they will, when your property taxes, and this is for the state of New Jersey, your property taxes, when they fall delinquent at the fourth quarter of every year, usually a week or so before Christmas, they'll go out for a tax sale. And they'll give the homeowner, if it's occupied or vacant, they'll give them plenty of notice in advance to try to redeem the taxes and cure it before it goes out for sale. Once it goes out for sale, it's usually a 16 to 18% interest that's charged on it until it becomes due. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of investors who will buy those liens and try to make, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10% to 18% on a lien, depending on how much they pay for it at the auction. And in New Jersey, if the person does not cure the taxes in 2 years, you can then start a foreclosure process. It's season at that time. You can then start a foreclosure process and then foreclose and take the property away via the tax lien. That comes as priority over mortgages on a property. Usually in that situation, if the house is worth anything at all, the bank who has the mortgage on a property will redeem it. And they call it a corporate advance where they would pay the taxes and then the homeowner will have to pay. It'd be, you know, money that the homeowner owes to the lender. Mm-hmm. In most cases now, most lenders escrow taxes and insurance and everything else. So they keep up with it because they know they can be wiped out from a tax lien. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, the lenders, they include it, but there's still tremendous amount of mortgages that the taxes are separate and the homeowner is responsible to pay. So, you know, what we usually do is we look at tax liens on vacant properties that are dilapidated and, you know, no one is living there, they're vacant and the taxes are above $20,000 or more. It's very hard for someone to come back and redeem those taxes, especially if the property is vacant. Mm-hmm. We need a substantial amount of repairs. So that's what we focus on and what we target because it's a low percentage that they will be redeemed. So that's the strategy we use to get real estate at a discount. That's basically what made me focus on it more mm-hmm. because I was like, hold on a second. If this guy is selling me the property at X, you know, he had to get the tax lien for this amount. And I did research and ran title on the property and saw what was involved and what was the taxes that was owed, what was the certificate. And most of the time they buy even that at a discount. So, for example, if someone owes $20,000 in taxes, when they go to the auction, if it's a vacant property, usually they'll start the auction at like $5,000 or $10,000. So you can actually buy that lien at a discount, and if the person redeemed, they have to pay the lien in full. Mm-hmm. So you may pay $8,000 for a $20,000 lien, then the person redeemed and paid the $20,000. You can make money that way, or you can make money by foreclosing and taking the property. So really, I would tell anyone who's interested in tax lien investing, consult with a tax lien foreclosure attorney in your state, figure out what are the pitfalls, what are your risks, attend an auction, you know, see who's there, who are the players, ask them questions, and then, you know, you can start to play the game from there. But it's a learn by doing experience. And it's patience. You have to have patience. These things take a couple of years. And if you want to get in quick and make money, then I would say wholesaling or try to flip a property. That would probably be faster to get to the bag instead of, you know, tax liens or notes. Notes take time as well.
Right. I appreciate the explanation. Thank you. So, Fuquan, if you had to do it all over again, what you know now, would you have changed your path of your journey? Yes or no, and then why?
That's a great question. I would probably do it all the same way. I think that what I went through made me who I am today. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful for the crash in 08 because I was young and I really didn't understand the power of a network and the power of mentors. I thought because I made a lot of money that, you know, I was it, the end all be all. And I've learned that you need to be surrounded by like-minded people and you need to have mentors, because it's basically speed. When you pay for a mentor, which a lot of people don't like to do, mm-hmm. you pay for speed, you pay to kind of look through their window of experience, and they kind of help you navigate through those pitfalls. So I would do everything the same. You know, for me, it's been a great journey mm-hmm. and a good learning experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. I would want to go through the pain and the hardship and what I went through, because it made me the person, the investor I am today, the father I am today. So, you know, I'm grateful for all those experiences and teachable moments.
I love that. No, thanks for sharing that. So what risk do you see out there that might be, you know, being ignored from a general market, or you can even speak specifically to New Jersey if you want. And then also, what opportunities do you see within certain real estate sectors?
Yeah, so I'll start with opportunities first. For me, I see a lot of people that are in the multifamily space that are exiting out because you have a lot of tenants gaming the system because of COVID, not paying rent. So those guys are literally getting crushed, mm-hmm. Especially in the lower end markets, the C class, D class markets, where you have a lot of the subsidized rents and you know, different quality of tenants there that are gaming the system. And those guys are selling, they're exiting that space in a hurry because they're losing money. And that's where we see opportunities at. So we're kind of looking at some of those opportunities, somewhere between 70 to 150, 100 unit buildings that we can go and take down at a big discount, because the big institutional guys, they don't play in that space. They usually start at 200 units and above, or 300 units, or 1,000 units. So we see a lot of great opportunities there in the markets that are distressed. As far as risk, I think people are really being a little too bullish and not paying attention to what's currently happening. There's a lot of phantom equity that is in the market. You don't know what the real values are because people are buying because there's not enough inventory. It's definitely a seller's market. So you want to make sure that you underwrite the deal properly. That's the risk that I see that is nationwide. People are just assuming that appreciation will continue to happen. And as long as they keep throwing this helicopter money out from the government and giving all these stimulus checks, people just don't really see what's happening and what it's going to be 4 or 5 years from now. There's a lot of people are not paying attention to the delinquencies that is snowballing. Mm-hmm. And they just think that the government have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars to keep putting a bandaid on it. Soon the bubble's going to burst. I would tell people to make sure they have cash to be able to take action. So, mm-hmm. you know, keep flipping and doing what you're doing, but just be wise and smart and build your cash reserves so you're able to play again. You know, that's pretty much the risk that I see people. They're putting all their chips on the table.
Sure. So when you, just to talk through that a little bit more, the fundamentals, I think, is what you were getting to, right? You have to focus on all the aspects of the underlying property. Don't count on the big depreciation that's been occurring in the market over the past year. What are some of those fundamentals that you focus on that you like to see in a property that you target?
Yeah, so for the rentals, it's cash flow. Mm-hmm. Like if the market was to drop, you know, 30% in value, you know, how would that cash flow still, mm-hmm. how would that look? So for me, that's first and foremost. Mm-hmm. On the flip side is just underwriting it, whereas, you know, what's the worst that can happen? If am I buying at still all in at 65 LTV? A lot of people are up to 80% LTV in certain areas. I'm still underwriting deals at 65 LTV, all in, renovation, holding time, everything else. So I know I have extra cushion. And it's hard to find deals like that. I get it. So you have to be a little bit more creative and do subject to and other types of innovation and different strategies that you can use in order to get properties at the discount. So that's some of the fundamentals that we use when we underwrite and evaluate deals. We're basing it. We're doing a risk-adjusted evaluation versus off a current market evaluation.
That's great. Now, patience is key. Especially in a market so hot like this. I know some investors,